Okay, let's start this press briefing. Good morning, welcome to this press briefing of the United Nations in Geneva. Today is Friday, 27th of February, and we have two briefings coming to us from IOM. In particular, the first one with the Deputy Director for Operations, Ms. Ugo Chi Daniels, who is coming in from Juba, and Julia Black, the Global Migration Data Analysis Officer from Berlin. But I'll start by giving the floor to Mohamed Ali Bounajela, who will introduce his colleagues. Please.
Thank you so much, colleagues, for coming. And today we will be indeed doing a couple of briefings, one with the Deputy Director General of Operations, DDG Ugo Chi Daniels, who will be briefing us on the impact of the humanitarian crisis on human lives. And she's speaking to us from South Sudan as she's visiting there. And highlighting the critical gaps in funding. The second debriefing will be on the IOM's new data released on the missing migrant project and the impacts of the loss of lives. Starting immediately with DDG Ugo Chi Daniels. Over to you, DDG.
Greetings from Juba, South Sudan. I'm leaving the country today with three clear impressions. First, the urgent need for peace and dialogue. Secondly, the generosity of host communities and the government for keeping borders open and welcoming refugees and returnees. And finally, the resilience of displaced communities across the country. At its core, this is a political crisis with profound humanitarian consequences. And without progress on the political track, humanitarian needs will only continue to escalate. Over the past 2 months alone, over 250,000 people have been displaced, and yet this has hardly been registered on the international scene. South Sudan remains one of the most displacement-affected countries in the world. Nearly 10 million people require humanitarian assistance, and more than 2.3 million people are displaced within the country. The joint border monitoring run by IOM, UNHCR, and the government has tracked over 1.3 million people who have crossed into South Sudan since the conflict erupted in Sudan. The regional dimension of the Sudan crisis is significantly compounding the pressure here, stretching already fragile systems and resources. In Rank, a border town I visited that normally has a population of 80,000, Rank has seen more than 1 million people passing through in less than 3 years, with hundreds still arriving every day. And as can be expected, transit facilities are operating far beyond their capacity. IOM is present at the border, providing registration, medical screening, protection, and mental health services, as well as onward transportation to ease the pressure in Rank. And over the past 2 years, we've directly supported more than 610,000 refugees and returnees. However, humanitarian assistance cannot be an open-ended response. From day one, it must be accompanied by a clear exit strategy and a long-term vision for development, one that's government-led, government-financed, with sustained support from partners. In Bentiu, I witnessed both vulnerability and progress. It remains the country's largest displacement site, with over 109,000 people living in fragile conditions, surrounded by floodwaters, and increasingly exposed to the impact of climate. People with already very limited resources are forced to cope with the impact of climate change on top of conflict and displacement. And yet, through flood mitigation efforts undertaken with the government and the World Bank, land has been reclaimed, allowing people and families to begin rebuilding flood-resistant homes and reconnecting to basic services. Durable solutions are beginning to take place, but progress to date remains fragile and must be actively protected. Without security, reliable services, and sustained investment in infrastructure and recovery, South Sudan risks being trapped in cycles of protracted displacement and dependency. Pressures are intensifying. Border communities are absorbing unprecedented arrivals. Climate shocks are compounding displacement, and infrastructure remains weak. IOM currently faces a $29 million funding shortfall for this year alone. This covers critical life-saving assistance, system-wide humanitarian enablers such as displacement data, supplies pipeline, humanitarian hubs, and onward transportation assistance, as well as health and protection and activities. The message from communities, what I heard, is very clear. Peace, stability, and the opportunity to rebuild their lives. South Sudan's leadership must meet these expectations, and the international community must not step back at this critical moment. Protecting lives today while investing in durable, development-oriented solutions for tomorrow must happen in parallel. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Ugochi, for this introductory remarks. I'll open now the floor to questions, first in the room. So I'll start with Olivia Potvin, Reuters.
Good morning. Thank you very much indeed for this briefing. Very struck what you said there about the amount of displacement and the limited global attention. One thing I just wanted to check in on was what your access is like. I understand last month South Sudan's military had ordered civilians and some personnel as well from a UN mission to evacuate three counties in Jonglei State. And I was just wondering what the update is and if you're facing any particular challenges in that regard. And then just in terms of the kind of humanitarian need, what would you say are the kind of priority areas and where you think the greatest risk lies currently? Thank you.
Go ahead, Ugochi. We answer one question after the other. Go ahead.
Okay. No, that's fine. Yes, indeed, access is a challenge. I raised this in all of the meetings that I had with senior government officials. And recently, the UN relief chief was here. I've been here. We have received assurances of improvements in access. But the reality is that it's fragile. There may be access today, not access tomorrow. There's huge impact on our operations. And it is one of the top challenges I hear consistently from my team as well as the UN system. So the issue is for government to live up to the commitments and promises that it has made for access. Right now, it is better than it was a few months ago, but there's no guarantee that that will be sustained without active engagement of the government. On critical life-saving services, it goes back to the point I made about the funding shortfall, and this is for critical life-saving assistance services that we provide, whether it has to do with health, whether it's provision of water, whether it's provision of shelter and non-food items, our ability to generate data and understand what is happening with displacement, as well as data to target those who are most vulnerable and to monitor their response, as well as support for the humanitarian hubs that enable not just IOM, but the international community here to provide the response in the deep field. And last but certainly not least is what we do on health and protection for the most vulnerable: women, children, people living with disabilities. This is what's at stake if we're not able to meet the funding gap in these critical areas.
Absolutely. Robin Miller, the French news agency, AFP.
Thank you. Good morning. Two questions from me. Firstly, could you say a little bit more about how this situation plays into the crises which are already going on in the country, how it may be compounding the poor situation there? And secondly, with Kordofan just over the border, are you seeing an influx of people fleeing that particular part of the conflict in Sudan? Thank you.
Thank you very much. So this situation right now, and it's one of the points that I made internally, it's dealing the humanitarian impact of the political crisis compounded by decades of protracted displacement, further exacerbated by climate. And it's happening at a time when the capacity and resources of IOM, of the UN system, is not what it has been in previous years. So it's fragile, it's precarious. It is why a big part of my visit was to bring visibility to this situation, to remind the government of our expectations in their leadership role and in their support to their citizens, so that that what we can bring is effective on the ground and supporting their efforts. But of course, what is happening in South Sudan is impacted by what is happening in the region. What we see with at the borders and the conditions, the status of people in rank, is directly tied to what's happening with the conflict here and what is happening in Sudan. So, of course, we are very concerned with Kordofan and what this means for the near future, keeping in mind, and as I mentioned, Renk, a town of 80,000, a million people have passed through. Almost all of the people who have passed through are being hosted in communities that had very little. So the coping capacity is at its brink, if not already exceeded. So we are very, very concerned, of course, with the crisis in Sudan, but we also have returnees coming from camps in other neighboring countries as well. And then, as I said, at a time when there are critical gaps in funding and capacity to support the country dealing with the interplay of all these pressures.
Thank you very much. Other questions to our IOM colleagues? I don't see any hand up. So I'd like to thank Ugochi Daniel very, very much for being with us. It's been a pleasure to have you here, sir, madam. And good luck with your very important work. But we will stay with IOM, with Mohamed Ali, who has, as I said, brought another colleague. Maybe you want to introduce her?
Thank you so much. So our second briefing is related to the press release we've issued. I'm joined by Julia Black, our IOM's Global Migration Data Specialist from Berlin. So she will take any questions that you may have. But first, let me give this brief summary of the statement that we put out yesterday, highlighting the latest data from IOM's Missing Migrants Project and what it tells us about the human cost of migration routes. So basically, at least 7,667 people tragically died or went missing on migration routes in 2025, about 21 lives lost every day. While this is lower than in 2024, it does not signal that the risks have eased, but because fewer people are attempting the routes. We believe that the numbers are likely higher than known. So people with the sea crossings remain especially dangerous, and record death were also reported in Asia along the eastern routes from the Horn Africa. And as you can see and said in different statements, early 2026 figures are already rising. These trends highlight the urgent need for safer migration pathways, stronger search and rescue, and action, urgent action actually, against smuggling networks that continues to put lives at risk. So let's perhaps take some questions. Julia Black will be answering all these questions. Thank you.
And welcome to Julia. Thank you very much, Mohamed Ali. Any question on this in the room? Yeah, Christian? Yeah, I know. But John Zarokostas has a question. Sorry, for Julia, Franz van Katteren, The Lancet.
Yes, good morning. I was wondering if you could first tell us which media organization breached the embargo. And secondly, I've been trying to get the report on your website, and it doesn't seem to be posted in the public domain the last time I tried. But I'm interested in if you have a breakdown of the data of the 7,667 tragic deaths, how many were in the Yemen, Horn of Africa, how many in the Mediterranean, and also the Americas route, and fourthly, the English Channel. And if you can break it down between people that died overland and how many died by sea. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll ask Mohamed Ali to speak to the embargo. But in terms of the breakdown from the routes that you mentioned, I'm just looking across my figure. So in the Americas, we recorded 409 deaths in 2025, which is lower than we've ever recorded before. We believe this is a real decrease because so many fewer people are attempting these irregular journeys. On the eastern route from the Horn of Africa that goes back and forth sort of from Yemen and Gulf countries, we saw a very significant rise in deaths, 922 recorded in 2025 compared to 558 the prior year. Almost all of these people were Ethiopian nationals. And it's very notable that last year there were three or four really mass shipwrecks that claimed almost 200 lives each on that route. The other routes you asked about were the Mediterranean. In the Mediterranean, we were able to verify the deaths of 2,185 people and another 1,214 on the Atlantic route towards the Spanish Canary Islands. What is quite notable for us, this is a decrease compared to 2024, but it's very noticeable for us last year that we are having less and less access to information, both due to humanitarian aid cuts and difficulties in getting official information. So we have reports of an additional 1,500 people who are reported missing at sea that we are not able to verify on these sea routes to Europe. In terms of when the report will be published, there's a second section of this report that centers around our analysis, our estimate of the number of families directly affected by this issue, which is a figure in the hundreds of thousands, that will be published in April. So there's a link in the press release that IOM issued if you're interested in receiving that report.
Okay, thank you very much, Julia. Mohamed Ali on the first question, John, and John has a follow-up.
So on the, just like to address the general technicality point about the embargo, we were aware of the embargo were broken and it was a human mistake. The reporter immediately called and apologized and explained that the embargo, that the mistake has been made, and immediately we've taken action and we have informed different reporters and those who received the embargo, the press release, and we explained the situation that and lifted immediately the embargo. So that's where we stand with this. So thank you.
Thank you very much. John, you have a follow-up?
Yes, thank you. It would be nice to know which outlet broke the embargo. You might say it's human error, but it's nice for us to know. And secondly, Julia, I asked for a breakdown of deaths on the English Channel. Thank you very much.
Yes, on that point, it is we recorded 36 deaths on the route from sort of France to the UK in 2025 compared to 85 in 2024.
Thank you very much, and thanks, John, for your second appeal. I think we have heard it. Any other question? Yes, Robin.
Thank you. The death toll for last year is not that much different from the year before. So do you see any progress anywhere on tackling the drivers of this movement of people? Any progress on tackling the gangs and the trafficking groups who are behind it, and also on providing alternative methods for migration, which could have an impact on this? Thank you.
Thank you. I mean, the drivers of irregular migration, which is where we're overwhelmingly seeing these deaths occur, are very complex. What we have seen, where we have seen some positive progress, is in countries, particularly in West Africa, where they are creating systems within their governments to start to address this issue. The Gambia has a whole working group within the government that's dedicated on this issue. And many of the Rabat process countries have a similar system that's starting as well. These groups are working both on kind of international coordination on search and rescue, but also on the very complex challenges of trying to help the families who are, you know, many of them are searching for missing people in the context of migration.
Thank you very much. Let me see if there is any other hand up. I don't see it. So thank you very much, Julia, and thanks very much, Mohamed Ali. You want to add something? Please.
No, maybe we can give the floor back on South Sudan to the DDG, if I think she's still connected.
Let me see if yes, I can see. Yeah, they're putting the video. Oh, thank you for staying with us, madam.
Yes, no, thank you. Thank you very much. I just wanted to take 30 seconds to close, because the questions, rightly so, were on humanitarian needs. But I do want to underscore that, yes, absolutely, we have to respond to critical life-saving needs. But if we are going to break the cycle here in South Sudan, we have to do provide this humanitarian assistance with an exit strategy for long-term transition and development outcomes. So we've seen, as I mentioned, we've seen progress on durable solutions. It can be done. It can be done simultaneously with responding to life-saving needs in the context of peace and dialogue. But I do not want to I want journalists to also leave with a very clear message on also the need for development assistance. South Sudan is one of the most highly prone countries to climate impact in the world. And what the people told me is they want to end their reliance on international assistance, on humanitarian aid. So I just wanted to close and leave with that, and thank everyone again for listening to me, and hopefully for ensuring that the message on South Sudan goes around the world.
Sorry, my mic was not on. So thank you very much to you for coming to our reporters and also spotlighting this situation, and also for your final remarks. It was very important to underline them. If there are no other questions for IOM or No, I don't see, so I will free you all. I just have a few announcements to make in terms of press conferences. Just after this briefing at 12 o'clock, the special procedures will give you a press conference. He's the special rapporteur on the situation of human rights in Afghanistan. He will brief you on the report, on its report on women's and girls' right to health in Afghanistan. Richard Bennett is the special rapporteur. He will be here to talk to you together with Nazifa Jalali and Suraya Dalil. I think you have received the invitation with the titles of all the speakers. Speaking about Afghanistan, I would also like to call your attention to the note to correspondents that we have issued yesterday on the Afghanistan and Pakistan cross-border clashes, where the Secretary General said he is following with concerns the reports of cross-border clashes between the de facto security forces in Afghanistan and Pakistani security forces, and where he urged the relevant parties to comply with their obligations under international law, including international humanitarian law, and to ensure the protection of civilians. And he urged the parties to continue to seek to resolve any difference through diplomacy while commending mediation efforts by several member states in recent months. Other press conferences next week, Tuesday, 3rd of March, that's going to be after the press briefing at 12 o'clock. You'll be briefed on the report of the special rapporteur on torture and other cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment or punishment. It's called Charter of Rights of Victims and Survivors of Torture, and the speaker will be the special rapporteur, Alice Jill Edwards. On Thursday, 5th of March at 11 a.m., it's the housing in crisis you will hear from on urgent call to action on domicile, resettlement, reconstruction, affordability, and climate, and that's going to be with the UN special rapporteur on the right to adequate housing. And finally, Friday, just before the press briefing at 9:45, you will hear from Martin Chungkon, the IPU Secretary General, together with Mariana Mützenberg, IPU Gender Program, and they will present to you the new IPU report on women in Parliament that they always issue ahead of International Women's Day. And that is... I just also wanted to remind you that on Monday, the Human Rights Committee will open its 145th session at 10 a.m. That will be in Palais Wilson. The countries that they will review this time are Andorra, Canada, Slovakia, Chad, and Moldova. And that's what I have for you. If there are no other questions, Paula. Can't hear you. Yes.
I was just muted.
Go ahead.
Good morning. So I just wanted to know, we heard yesterday that Cindy McCain will be stepping down in 3 months. I was just wondering, from the WFP as head, I would like to know if what we should be expecting from the selection process. Whether, again, we should be expecting a U.S. Candidate to be chosen to replace her, or whether it may be open for other international candidates.
Thank you very much, Paula. I will have to invite you to talk to our colleagues at WFP on that. But what I can tell you is that the Secretary General has greatly appreciated the work that Cindy McCain has done at the head of the World Food Programme. She has been doing a great job in leading the agency and reforming the agency at a time of extreme humanitarian needs, at a time where there is less and less resources. And this is something that the Secretary General has hugely appreciated. For the process, I'll ask you to contact our colleagues in Rome. And if you need a contact, of course, we can give the name of our colleagues. If there are no other questions, I thank you all very much. Thank you for being with us the whole this week, which was quite a busy one. I wish you a very good weekend and see you next week. Thank you.